You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
And there's also quite a commitment to allowing those writers the space to actually go quite in depth with what they're saying. Like, the pieces that you put up are very long.
Yeah, it's a bit of a struggle because long form is really hard online. So we are trying to have more of a range. But yeah, I think it is an opportunity to dig a bit deeper into.
I think it's so important because you've got now this culture of really short stories. Basically, most of the stories in the headline or whatever it is, just for clicks. And if you can, you know, I don't know what your funding or the support that you have in terms of resources and stuff like that, but to create a space where fostering really complex ideas and the discussion of that is allowed is huge, because that's kind of a big issue in, you know, the dumbing down of society, you might say.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's a part of it too, which I think about a lot. I don't think, you know, it's the writer's responsibility to think about it, but, you know, in 10 years and 50 years from now, the stuff that goes a bit deeper and has a bit more thought behind it is going to be so valuable in terms of capturing where things were at. And I mean, so does clickbait. That captures something else too. So, you know, it all does something.
Yes, it does. It does. That's true. I guess we are here to talk about this series of talks that the Pantograph Punch has put on. Can you just talk to us about the different talks?
Yeah, so the Auckland Arts Festival invited us to program a series of three talks in response to the other shows or events that were happening as part of the festival. And the events that we programmed, we did one on International Women's Day called The War Room. And that actually came out of a discussion where initially the festival had been thinking of bringing over an international speaker and had not decided who that would be. And we had this conversation where I kind of suggested that maybe instead of bringing someone from overseas over, we just give the space to a bunch of amazing voices in our city, and rather than us setting the agenda, asking them what questions that they were currently grappling with. So the event that it ended up being, the War Room, was 18 speakers, each hosting a table, leading a conversation over breakfast for an hour, well, actually an hour and a half in the end. Very over time, about something that they were grappling with, whether it was in their personal life or in their work or just in the city or in the world. And then the second event we ran was called Bad Refugee, and it was an attempt to really dig a bit deeper into the kind of ways in which we tend to talk about the refugee experience in the media, but also in our artwork. And, you know, it feels particularly it was a weird timing. I mean, I guess it's always weird timing because there's always horrible things happening, but the idea with it, the framing for that, it was actually that last year in Christchurch there was a school that encouraged their kids to dress up as refugees as part of a fundraiser for World Vision, and they told everyone to dress in rags. And I guess part of that was not trying to draw the extreme dichotomy of, like, bad and good behaviour on the part of everyone, but kind of saying even sometimes good intentions can get misread and be damaging. The Bad Refugee title kind of came out of a conversation that I'd had with Gorries about how, you know, how people have accused her of faking her refugee experience for political gain, which is, I can't imagine why you would want to do that. And the third event is called No Offence, and it's a panel that explores whether there's anything that should be off limits to artists, and I guess by implication, the audiences, and whether that means, you know, it might range from anything to do with work that should be censored to works that might be seen as culturally appropriative, to just works that amplify voices that don't need amplifying.
Lots of things I want to go back to. We'll start with the War Room. I guess I was there, so I could probably talk a bit more about this than the other ones, but your reasoning even just behind kind of suggesting, rather than getting somebody kind of outside of New Zealand, let's actually see who we've got here, because there was some pretty incredible people there, and 18 women all doing really cool shit basically, and really important stuff as well, and then having guests involved in kind of extending that discussion. That's really important, and I don't know if there's actually many spaces that do that.
Yeah, it was, I don't think there are either. And, you know, like, it wasn't an event that wanted to resolve anything, because you can't resolve any of these big, tricky questions. I mean, for example, so some of the questions were like, after the storm, what next for Me Too? Or how do we stop our country from producing and perpetuating homelessness? Or is 40 too late to change everything? What happens if you turn 40 and realize the job you have isn't the one you want? So it wasn't all, you know, there was a really wide range of topics, and all of them were really big. I called it the war room because I feel like often, you know, it's a fact, often the people in positions of power and the people who have the power to change, whether it's policy or the city in some meaningful way, of a certain demographic. And this was an attempt to create a space and privileged voices who don't always get a seat at the table, to give everyone a seat at the table to talk about these issues, and then hopefully to take them back with them into their daily lives.
There are connotations around war, though. Would you be, I mean, were there concerns in terms of trying to kind of take that concept and put it into a place where, I mean, Altea Square, you know, that's where it was, or even just generally we weren't in any kind of real war?
Yeah.
Do you think there's a sort of a problem in that sense, or?
I think that's a really good consideration. We wanted it to be indicating basically that these were really serious conversations, and that they deserved to be spoken about, and that they were genuine battles, that, you know, contemporary or like metaphorical battles that needed to be fought and dealt with. So that it was definitely intended as a metaphor, as you know, but I definitely take the point that it does also have some dangerous connotations too.
You've said there wasn't sort of an expectation of trying to answer all those questions, but do you have a sort of a hope or kind of, you know, what's going to happen next from that conversation? Is there something that you would follow up? What does come next? Because, you know, you can have these conversations, but how do we transfer those conversations into action, I suppose?
Yeah, I think that my hope is that things do happen as a result of people's experience of that morning. Really, our hope with that event was to spark something that each person there could carry with them and hopefully continue to do something with. I think, first of all, just like being more conscious and talking about these issues with other people who, you know, might not have chosen to go to the event in the first place is a really good start.
And on that point, I just thought it was really good too, because you decided to sit at a certain table, and then however many other people decided to sit at that table, and they could be approaching that question from completely different perspectives and experiences, and you didn't really know who you were going to be sat with.
Yes.
Which is really important in terms of coming together from all walks of life and approaching these issues that this country is facing, I guess. In terms of did you want to say anything else about the other two events, or?
Yeah, I could tell you. So the first question in the Q&A, so this has been like a 45-minute conversation, and there'd been a section of it where everyone had been talking about the where are you from question and the damaging effect that question can have when it's asked again and again, regardless of whether, you know, because sometimes people do have good intentions when they're asking that question. It's not always like intentionally an othering statement, but, you know, like when it's asked of you every day, that definitely has a certain effect. But anyway, at the end, the very first question was someone saying, well, why is that question so bad? Because, you know, I, growing up here, when I see someone who looks different to me, they look very exotic. And so I do want to know where they're from. Anyway, you know, the audience had the expectation that your face is making.
And sorry, should probably explain that. It's just, I mean, because these attitudes exist, though, right? They're people that really think that it's okay to exoticize somebody.
Yeah.
And many probably do it in a deliberately horrible way.
Yes.
And then others actually might just not understand that it's, yeah, that it's actually not a nice thing to do.
Totally. Totally. And actually the best thing about that question is the fact that probably a lot of people in the room were thinking it. And the way that everyone answered that question was so generous that I kind of thought, actually, maybe a few people might walk out of that space and rethink whether they ask that question in the future.
Because a lot of other people might have been thinking it, but in a much more innocent way, just because it's like, totally, it is a way to kind of bridge a gap.
Yeah.
But perhaps if you take it a step back and think, why am I thinking that there is a gap in the first place? This, yeah, person might live down the road from me.
Yes.
Why don't I say, how are you?
Yeah.
Instead of that, or where do you work, or where do you live, or in, totally, a way where you're kind of prefacing it not to say that you are necessarily automatically thought of as other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was, I think John gave an example at the end where he was like, you know, because a lot of people, or someone had brought up in the Q&A about when you're in a taxi and you want to make conversation, and that's often where that question comes up. And he was like, but you wouldn't ask that if your driver was white, so why would you ask it anyway?
Sometimes I do, just to make a point about colonization. I just want to say that, because it's something like a response. It's just as an example, like if they ask, you know, where are you from? And then it's kind of, if it is done uncomfortably,
yeah,
as a way of kind of reasserting that ground sort of, and if they are white, saying, well, where are you from? You know, yes, like, oh, I'm from New Zealand. I'm like, but where are you from originally?
Yes, that is really good. That's a Gulen who's on the panel, right, said that he does that too. And it's, yeah, yeah,
it's a way of actually, yeah, trying to rebalance that power imbalance that exists in that question. Yeah, yeah.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.